working all right. I think it is working all right. It is working all right. Yes, it's all right. So, now, Steve, first of all, can you tell me a bit about your family background and where your family comes from? Where they lived in Birmingham?
Well, my mother lived in this area, Solihull, and my dad lived in Liverpool. And I presume that they met up in the war time and got married. And they used to live in what they called prefabricated buildings, you know, like asbestos-type buildings in Solihull, which were rife at the time, all over the place, you know. There was these quick buildings that they put up and take down. And I think about 36 years ago, they moved out to Bentley Heath, which is about 4 miles outside of Solihull, which is a very small village, if you like, at the time, although now, it's, of course, in 30 years, it's built up now, but it's still a quiet area compared to, say, Birmingham or Solihull, a small place like. There's a 7 of us kids, four girls and three boys.
And when were you born?
When was I born? 1948. So that was the year of the introduction of the National Health Service. And now we're seeing it being decimated in 35 years, or 34 years it is.
And where do you fit in? Are you the youngest?
The third youngest. That's it. I've got a sister of 19. And she's still with her son.
Oh, yes.
And I've got a sister about 41, 42, who lives in Canada, as does my brother. He lives in Canada as well, he's that bit younger, a couple of years younger. And I've got one sister who's in the whose husband's in the army in Germany. And I've got a brother who works in Leeds. He's a pastor. I've got another sister who lives in Solihull, whose husband works where I work, who's a foreman. In actual fact, he works in the vicinity of where I work, and at one time he wasn't a foreman.
He's still there?
Yeah. My youngest sister is presently just finishing one of those yacht courses, you know, the 12-month government course. She finishes that September, and then she's finished. She's been taking numerous exams for audio typing, that sort of thing, but still has been unable to get a full-time job. Although she's been for interviews, she's done no good, like a good many others.
Now, your father, you told me he went to work at the Rover, but what did he do before he went there?
Well, he must have been at the Rover 28, 29 years. So where he was before that, I don't know. It might well, I've got an idea he broke his service. So he may well have been there sort of since the war years. And
where did he work? On the Land Rover?
Yeah, he worked on Land Rover, because that's what it was years ago. It was just Land Rover, Range Rover, it's something new. And then of course the cars came along and the Rover cars. So I think the Land Rover is the oldest vehicle, that's probably why it's called Land Rover. But,
and when did he become a foreman?
Well, he must have been a foreman for may well be 20 years or something. You know, so
you only remember him.
I can only remember him as a foreman. Mm. Although I know when he first went there, he worked in the paint shops, and that's where he became a foreman in the end. He was a foreman in the paint shops, and then a senior foreman, and then he left.
But always in paint, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Now, you also told me that you had, I think, two brothers-in-law who worked at the Rover.
Yeah, the one brother-in-law is still working there as a foreman. And the other brother-in-law, he left and went with my sister to Canada. But he worked in a paint shop. This was at a time sort of years ago when, you know, you had to be in the know. You know, in other words, it was quite a family thing, if you like, because it was such an attractive job money-wise. But it was a question of almost who you knew who was able to get in. You know, my brother-in-law's got in, the same as I got in, you know, through a recommendation of my father, and it was virtually sewn up. So certainly years ago, that's how you used to get in.
You didn't have to be in the union before you
got in? No, it was a straightforward thing to... You just made a simple application, that was it. That was all done formally, you know.
Mm.
Open and shut. My lad wants a job. And the union signed you up. You only need a day.
Now, when did you leave school? How old were you?
I think I was about 16 and a half. Which years ago was like the fifth form. The fourth form, you normally qualify to leave. I stayed on. Take GCSEs, but I dropped out, if you like, part of the way through. And I went and I did a few different jobs. I started off cleaning caravans to start with, then I started in the same caravan firm at an accessory shop, and I managed that. And at the same time, I joined the what was then. The Territorial Army, you know, that's the part-time army, weekends and evenings.
Yes.
And that was demanded of my time, and sometimes it meant me being away from work. And they weren't too pleased when, after having 1 week off on top of my holiday, I said I needed another 2 weeks off to go on a parachute course. And they said, well, if you go, yeah, your job's not here when you come back. So I went, and lo and behold, when I got back, you know, that I was finished. And certainly, of course, there was no unions, it was only a small firm at the time. That's a little bit bigger now. So I was out of my ear. And fortunately, at the time, of course, I was still single. My brother was a quantity surveyor at a building firm, and he got me a job labouring. And I went sort of from that site to another site, and from that site to another firm. Then I passed through about 4 building firms, you know, because as soon as the contract finishes, as a rule, he was thrown up, unless there was another contract in the facility, you know. And I'd be, 14 years ago, I was working in the solar area for a building firm, and at that time I was what they called a ganger. In other words, I was just a go-between the foreman and the labourers, you know. Slightly higher rate. But at that age, at 21, it was time for me to go into the factory. This was all organised for me. So I was a bit like like an Indian marriage, you know. It was all set up. When I was 21, I was going in, come hell or high water. Anyway, on my 21st birthday, and I decided to have a half a day, because I never lose time. I decided to have a half a day from the building firm, and I said, yeah, it's all right, because it's your birthday, you know, we'll pay you. So I went home to have my dinner, and lo and behold, my dad came home at lunchtime, and he says, I've got an interview for you this afternoon, you can come back to work tomorrow. So, of course, I went there, and interviews, open and shut. In actual fact, Maurice Hansen, who you've probably heard of, plant director now. He interviewed me, and it was open and shut. I got the job. Of course, I went to work the next day, and I said, I'm handing me notice, and they said, is it more money you want? We'll give you more. I says, no. I says, I've got to go. Got to go to the Rover. Mm. And that was it. And it was a few pounds more, probably about another 25% more than what I was earning. Anyway, and of course, it was a drastic change from outside to inside. The money seemed to go down quite well, and the overtime was always there, so that was an attractive thing. There was always money on top. If I wanted it, and of course it was from being a 6 day working to 5 day working. So my weekends was always my own.
Just days, or did you have to do that?
At the Rover. Days. It was only days. It's only ever been days since I've been here. Although there have been voluntary nights for a few people. But I never changed that pack here.
No. And do you remember what it was you first got, the first pay? 1970.
I think it was, I've got an idea it was about £29. I think I was earning £21 when I worked for the building firm, and £29 when I went into the island.
Yes, I have seen some figures that around.
It might well have been 31, 32 or something, because I've got an idea the first fortnight you used to, you didn't get your full pay. You know, and the difference between your pay and your full pay was divided amongst the group. It was some funny thing that I never understood at the time. And that's what used to happen. It was like a trial, you say. And apparently, some of your work was taken on board the people, and you just came into the job slowly. And at that time, it was, you know, the work content would go up and down, etc. And it was all bookable. All the extra work was bookable, and so your money would go up and down. You know, probably by within £1 or £2, it was quite often going up and down like that. The only thing was, the work was never, or could never be, divided up fairly. It's quite often, you know, they said, oh, we've certainly got a certain contract of vehicles coming down, it needs this as extra. And when that work came to your area, there was so much work that had to be done. Well, of course, you can't divide up just as something small between, say, 30 people.
No.
Only a few people could do it. So those few people, if you like, was earning the money for the rest.
Yes.
The money was always divided, you
see.
So it never seemed to be a fair system, I thought, when I first got there, because quite often I used to think that I was the one who was doing it all. You know, not me personally, but there was just a few of us who seemed to be doing it all. I should imagine we probably were, and that was because the more experienced people in the group, if you like, were taking full advantage of the people with no experience.
So what was your very first job in the paint?
Well, I didn't go in the paint shop. That's that was probably so that people couldn't say, oh, he's his dad, you know. So I actually worked on the assembly lines, and the first job I had was the worst job, which everybody used to get at the time, you know, if you dropped in at the right time. It was literally sweeping out the backs of the Land Rovers and putting petrol in and a few other ups and bumps, but basically it was meant climbing up in and out of a vehicle 70 times a day and sweeping out and picking everybody's sandwiches up, and, you know, metal and swarf and all these eggs and tomatoes, you name it, everything was thrown in, because people sit down. At that time they used to sit in the vehicles, because years ago we never really had seats like we have now. You know, you used to sit on a tin can or a tyre or whatever you could find. So the backs of the Land Rovers were handy dustbins to have around.
Yes.
So that's why it was probably one of the worst, or one of the dirtiest jobs to do. No doubt it wasn't the hardest. And sort of from that job, progressed further up the line, but still within the same group. You know, the further up the line you went within your area, normally would probably be perhaps the softer job.
Which group was that?
Well, I literally worked on the end, in other words, the vehicles came off with wheels. Like the next job up from the sweeping out, which I used to do, was the fitting of the wheels. Now, that was the heavy job. And then the next job up then would be fitting the sills, which is a light job, you know, and then there's another job, and that sort of thing. So certainly in the area I was, that's how the work seemed to go, you know, from an easy-ish job to a more dirty job. And after sort of staying in that group for about 18 months, we was on what we were called the 1 and 5 rate. How that really related to your money, I don't know, other than it meant that if you was on 1 and 6, you was on about £2 a week more, you see, which was the floating rate or the snagging rate. So after 18 months, I decided, well, after sort of every few months, I was found I was getting bored. And so I took a floating job, which was a perk at the time. You know, if you impressed the foreman, then you went floating. And of course, to get the extra £2, you got the £2, plus, of course, this carrot of all the overtime that you wanted. That's virtually how it went for the floaters, because there was the people who got the expertise, presumably. And that was obviously a thing that I was after, because I was about to get married. And I could see the advantages of being able to work over. And I was doing it.
Yeah.
Although it took me a number of years before I realised that work couldn't be everything. And weekends at home, even if it was doing nothing, was a greater advantage to me than being at work and earning money only to spend it. With no commitments like a child, at the time, money wasn't too important. I realised after a period of time.
Did you buy this house?
Yeah, we bought this house.
When you got married?
About 18 months after we got married. And we've been married 12 years. So it's sort of, we must have bought this perhaps around that period when I became a floater. Mm. In other words, I got the higher rates, nice. You know. And
it was easy to get the mortgage, wasn't it?
It was reasonably easy, you know. You had to, I think we had to put some like £500 down, which was perhaps quite a bit a few years ago. And the mortgage was always related to, at that time, was whatever you earned a week would have to be your repayment each month. And they didn't, at that time, take too much notice of what your wife was earning. It wasn't really taken into consideration, although of course it is now, joint income, you know. But this was about as much as we could afford on my money, even though my money was good compared to a lot of people at the time, sort of 12 years ago. It could only buy us a house of this sort of standard.
No, it's quite big.
Well, yeah, we. This was really all we could afford, you know. We didn't. I wanted a garage on the side, I couldn't get one in the area that I wanted. So luckily enough, we've got nobody overlooking us on the back end. It's just, you know, allotments and things. The number of houses we went to, there was houses all around. So we was quite fortunate to have this. I'm still amazed now that the prices are still so low priced. But it's because I think there's no garage. And because, of course, the house is about 40 years old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose
it's
quite Now, when you got the first job at the Rover, did you have any experience in repairing cars or working on cars?
No.
No interest?
No.
Was that true for most people who were new, that they didn't know anything about
cars? Yeah, I think it was, yeah. Because at the time, you see, because the, I mean, the production was something like 70-odd, perhaps 73 or something a day, that's quite a fast turnover for us on Land Rover because of the complex of the vehicle. I know it's not perhaps the 100 or it might be at Longbridge or 200 as it is now, but certainly at 70 odd, the cycle time was pretty small, so it was quite easy. It'd be like to train somebody up and say, you know, I'm going to show you a job now, it's going to take 6 minutes. You'll do that until the day you die. But of course you never did, you could always change your answer. So for, you didn't need no qualifications, nothing, that you'd be shown something in 6 minutes. And you'd pick that work up, you know, within a couple of hours you'd be able to hold it, and that'd be your path, you know. You didn't need no expertise or any experience on cars, as I certainly didn't have.
So are many of the people you worked with in the beginning still in the same section?
No, I should imagine virtually everybody's moved. They're sort of out. In the section I'm in now, there's sort of two people at it. Another two out of, say, 10 or 12 who were there, say, 8 years ago, because I've sort of moved a little bit around the shop. Now I'm in an area where I've been static for sort of 8 years. Prior to that, you know, I only know of sort of the original, say, group of people I worked with. There's probably only one. Definitely one. There'd be two. There's two people out of the original 30, and that's 14 years ago, 13 or 14 years ago. So there's only two out of about 30, so there's been a big turnover, people have left. Some have just have moved, only a few, because there is, without a doubt, a big turnover. You know, a lot of people have gone. Even people who've been there a long time have chose to, that they prefer to take a chance on the dole, find another job. They're staying there because the problems of the management, that's what they go down to, not necessarily the money. People find the conditions don't always mean the dirty conditions, the conditions of what you have to put up with from the management who don't explain too well why there is a need for a change. And I've noticed that a lot.
Is that people, something of the last 3 years?
Or oh yeah, it's definitely within about the last 4 years, you know, people have gone. And it's because of that, without a doubt. It's not all money. Because some people would be like myself, for instance, Perhaps because I'm a shop steward, I don't experience it so much.
Mm.
But if I was on the shop floor and I was, found I was on a boring job, like the majority of us are on boring jobs. As well as having a boring job, you've got a foreman who, who's got this notion whereby he's got to rule with an iron fist, that sort of thing. Now, if I was suffering that, no doubt I might well be in a position where I might be saying, well, I've got to look for another job, because I never have looked for another job. How I'd ever shape up if they did say, I'm packing up, sack me or whatever, how I'd get on, I don't know, but I've never thought about it too much. I don't think it would worry me too much. Mm. What it would do now, you know, with a child on the way, I don't know. But certainly my outlook is now, it'll do me.
Yes.
And although the money is poor, it's better than dull money. And that's just about all it is.
Yes. No, it's still a lot more than dull money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But without a doubt, the world's got harder and harder. Since the Edwards, since the introduction of Edwards, I don't know who's done, but things will never be like they were.
No,
no doubt about it, that may well be that things were slack. But they seem to have gone over the top now.
How many people are there now on Land Rover? Total, more or less.
Well, I think Land Rover, on Land Rover,
yes,
as opposed to Range Rover, I couldn't guess, other than say perhaps, 1500, something like that. And I should imagine them figures are sort of double, sort of 10 years ago, without a doubt. So.
And so how did you get involved in trade unions and when and so on?
When? I keep saying I think it was about 8 years ago, and I was doing rectification work and it would be like snagging, but on the end of the line.
The fine line?
No, not the fine line, the next shop alone. It's a line similar to that. You know, if you ever, one day somebody might go and take you there, people call it the madhouse, because years ago, you know, the only way people were able to sort of get through the day was to perform, and there was people, all sorts of things just happening out. You used to have a bloke who used to dress up every day, you know, he'd dress up and in soldiers' uniforms and everything and just walk around. And it was quite a mad place, but it helped you through the day, and it certainly broke the monotony, because it was quite terrible, you know, with a small cycle of work. And doing that all the time, it was very monotonous. It's not so monotonous now because of the fact you've got a lot more to do. But on not so many vehicles. But
you mean now people have longer cycles?
Yeah, compared to what they were. Yeah, I mean, tell you a few minutes, but sort of years ago the cycles were smaller. But I mean, in some areas now you might have a cycle of 80 minutes, and another area now you've got a cycle of 8 minutes. You know, so there's a.
Yeah.
Years ago it was even less than that. So anyway, when I moved away from the track to do the snagging and. The shop steward was away, and I think he'd had a heart attack. And so, on the back of that, I became the temporary shop steward. And after attending a few meetings, I could see that there was a lot of interest in it for me. You know, the ability to get up and speak is something that was strange to me, as opposed to working. Here was me, an opportunity here to do. Voice my own opinions and voice opinions of the group, and be able to compete with somebody, if you like, even with their own trade union, trying to get over our point of view. So the arguing certainly appealed to me. And when he came back, of course, this was at a time when shop shooter was that quite easily able to get off the job. So in the early time, I had a fair bit of time off, and that was something new as well, you know, from. Sort of never been off the job, if you like. I was, you know, maybe an hour or an hour and a half a week was quite a lot, you know. What am I doing here? I was just thinking, I'm being paid for this.
Yeah.
And I'm liking it as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So when the chap came back, I had a word with him anyway, and the majority of the group felt that we should elect a new shop steward. And he took it in good heart, because... who, like a lot of shop stewards, and certainly a lot of stewards now, even more now, you know, somebody had to be the shop steward, and and it was one, and he never did it any good, you know, because if you haven't got the interest, even though you've got the time off, you've got to have the interest as well, you know, when you're there, you know. And he didn't carry out his job as he should have, and so I was elected then about 8 years ago. And even though sort of the group of people that I've represented has halved, well, I should say half, I should imagine there was about 70 originally, because I used to represent the 106 righty people. It used to be because there was this business here of 105 and 106, and if you was on 106, people were very jealous of that. And a lot of people used to sort of hate you without even knowing it, you know, because you used to get the overtime that they never got. You was on £2 more than them. Even though they could have the same option if they wanted to, they weren't prepared to do it. So there was a lot of jealousy on the rates. So, and of course, the 106 rated people were spread all over the shop.
Yes.
And sort of outside in the rectification area outside.
Yes.
So I represented a very large group at one time, and then in the end we got it down to, we divided it into four in the end. So that made my job easier. And of course, since then, my group has actually been halved again, you know, because people have left and not required.
Originally you represented just the madhouse, but all the rectifiers.
Oh, no. The madhouse at the time probably had about 600 people in. And there was possibly about 100, 106 operating people. So, and they were scattered all over the place. Now, for the shop steward to do his job right, he would have to call a meeting every time he went to a meeting. Other than that, I had to sort of try and get round them all and keep them up to date with what's going on. It became, when you did the job properly, you came to realise how impossible it was to do it. You know, if you're all in one area, it's easy.
Yes.
But because there was one here and two here, that sort of thing. So I've managed to get divided, and I think I ended up with about 30, and now it's something like 20. So.
And what were the main issues in the beginning? What were the sort of, do you recall the first sort of
issue? It was never no pay negotiations. It was quite often it would be. It could quite often be a lot of safety issues, because certainly the area, the immediate area that I represented, was a no-smoking area. We had a lot of problems with people coming in and smoking, people forgotten, all this sort of thing. There was people coming in with open petrol cans, you know, in watering cans, and walking around, and people were smoking in the busy blown places.
It was all the band system then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Work had gone.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
Overtime wasn't there?
Oh yeah, quite often. Oh yeah, overtime, blimey, yeah, like just like it is now.
And were quite often jealous also?
Yeah, you know.
Among themselves, like, you can stay but I can't.
Yeah, well, that used to happen. So there was, and that was a problem to sort out, because certainly a lot of the people I represent were people, if you like, who supped up to the foreman, you know, who crawled around a foreman. So it took a long time for me at the time to get the people to, in my own group, to recognise the fact that there should be a rota, an overtime rota, even within our group. Now, other groups had rotas and perhaps got one out of about 15 or one out of 20, and we would have about 15 out of 20, that sort of thing.
Mm.
But it wouldn't always be. Quite often it would be the same 15, so it was a job beginning to change around to that way of thinking. But at the same time, within sort of about probably six to 12 months, I could see that there was always problems in and out of the shop, you know, in other areas. And at that time, certainly, there was a lot of people who liked the idea of going home because they could afford to, so there was quite often disputes over nothing, and people would go home and we'd be left, because we'd always be working. They'd always keep us, you see. We'd never involved. The group I represented were never involved in anything. We went along with the majority of people who thought that we was different, and so we were different. So at that time, we had there was a shop committee then that I mentioned to you before about, and that was a group of shop stewards, probably six or seven shop stewards out of, say, 28, and them shop stewards would represent the shop. And At the time, there was no representation from the 106 rated people. Although, if you like, in theory, that committee of people should represent everybody, but of course, they was there and we was there, and they was always jealous of us anyway. So, but within a couple of months, I managed to break into their ranks, and I had to go on that shop committee as well. So it gave a fair appraisal of what the whole shop was thinking at different times. And we were able to then start do things together. We started to move away from the idea that every time there was a dispute, because there was many, every time there was a dispute, we wouldn't have the company, if you like, getting rid of the blokes who work on the tracks, yet still able to do something else with, say, my group. You know, we would go as well. So they would know then that if they hit him on the head, that they wouldn't get that anymore.
Yes.
And we would go with them. So quite often it would be a cost. And it was only the right way. It was only the right thing to do anyway. But that's how that committee sort of got better, and it developed quite. It became quite a strong committee, I'd say. Certainly after that, because it got to the point where every day there was about, like I say, six or seven of us. Every day, a certain member of the committee, and the company used to hate it. And people used to laugh at it, but every day at 8 o'clock, one of the committee would go over to the superintendent's office and he'd meet with him, and if there was any problems of the day that could be sorted out, then we used to quite often sort them out, or if he anticipated making changes, then he would negotiate with us, as opposed to the Land Rover committee, which later on should have looked after everything, but we was a big area, a strong area, and we was able to get away with having a committee that fully represented us. And in the end, we got it to the stage at one time where that committee, there was one member off the job, if you like, all day long. Like the senior steward now.
Yes.
But specifically just for our shop. So without a doubt, it was a powerful committee. And we know that members of the trade union didn't like it either. Because it was... it showed, if you like, that we were fragmented. Fragmented, yeah. It would be, without a doubt. And, like I say, we spent a lot of time...
Because the committee is unifying, isn't it?
Well, but at the same time, we would look after ourselves.
Oh, so, yes.
And without taking too much notice of the whole picture. So if we did something one day, that could have effect on everybody else. And that is why now, really, as long as you've got... a fully representative committee covering everything, and they are able to take up everybody's problems, then that's got to be the right way to do it, as opposed to have little shops doing their own thing. You know, we did our own thing because we was a big area, we was the biggest area, the biggest building, and we got away with it because of that, because we were so powerful.
Who were some of the other leading stewards in that group?
There's
was John you know, the guy I met, John, what was his name? You know, the foreman we met.
Oh, Johnny Fox, yeah, him. There was only... Johnny Fox, yeah. He was on it. And there's nobody else now. From the old days. There's one other person left, and he works over on the stage 2 line. And he may well be an interesting person to talk to, because he's been there about 20 odd years as well, and he was very active as a shop steward.
Who is he?
Johnny Holbert. You know, he could probably
help
you. He'd sort of tell you prior to my days, and he might tell you similar things to what I'm saying, because we know that we did pose a threat to the company, and we was quite often working within the procedure, going to various levels of meetings, going off plant to the external stage, you know, with Sam Robinson, and with the national officials involved in our meetings, you know, the issues that we've instigated. And that range from all sorts of things, but from loss of pay for various disputes where we felt we were being forced into a position. Got to the stage, loss of pay for our shop stewards' meetings, because we used to have shop stewards meetings just for our shop. You know, that's something else we developed. And we even got a shop stewards room built at a cost to the company. And although it was only a metal building, it was something that nobody else had ever done. And that was through negotiation and pressure at the time that we was able to get away with. And on the introduction of a new area manager, he then started to challenge us and started to deduct pay for this whenever the meetings ran over, you know, from the lunch hour into the afternoon.
Yes, yes.
And there was many claims that we had in. And I can remember one time we had about four different claims for payment in at various stages of the procedure. You know, we wouldn't allow them to say, use this one as a measuring stick, I'm trying to think of the word now.
Yardstick?
Yeah, like a yardstick. In other words, I can't think of the word. But in other words, fight one, and that would reflect on it all on all the others. In other words, we said our meetings always ran over because we were doing something to for the company's benefit and for our members as well, and that sort of thing. Instead of us putting one claim in and saying, if we win this, then we've won them all.
Oh, yes, yes.
I still can't think of the word now. And we had various, of course, at that time there was about five stages of procedure, and we had about four stages coming from four different meetings that ran over, and every time we were justifying. So, of course, every time you have a meeting with a company, it's a cost to them, because they've got to meet you. And, of course, the higher up you go, then you've got managers who've got to meet you.
Yes.
And then people have then got to go off plant and meet in Birmingham, and Tyburn Road, didn't they? No. But
by that time, the senior stewards would be involved.
Yeah, they started getting involved. Yeah, they had to get involved then, that was all. But certainly at that time, we felt we never needed them.
Huh.
You know, and although the convener was always an asset, and as it was Joe even then. The senior steward, and there's been a number of changes. The senior stewards at that time, we felt that that was of no real benefit to us. That was something we had to put up with. That's how we felt in our small world, that we had to have them, put up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they couldn't at the time have the experience if there was a turnover, say, every 2 years, because the elections were going on, I think, every 12 months or something like that. And quite often there'd be a turnover. And they never seemed to get actively involved, although we've got a senior steward now who's perhaps too involved in everything. But he, without a doubt, has got the experience that is required now. But unfortunately, it's only him who's got it.
Mm.
And if he goes tomorrow, for whatever reason, numerous reasons why he might disappear from the scene, the experience is gone. Even though, you know, I've said to you before, he's got deputies. We find that the deputies aren't used. And
so, what happened to that committee? I mean, when did it start to decline in importance?
It's about probably 4 years ago, because we would anticipate that the management and senior stewards assisted in our downfall. And it was probably around the era of Edwards, and he started to brainwash people into thinking, you know, he's towards his way, and although we were trying to lead people, perhaps in our area, to do the things that we wanted them to do, taking notice of what they wanted, but at the same time still trying to show a lead. That lead, no doubt, quite often moved away from sort of the Edwards type thinking. In other words, let the managers manage. And so, even if you like, to a degree, the shop floor started to see there was cracks there, because had it been strong, no matter what even the trade union had done on the site, with the assistance of the company, they'd never have cracked us.
Mm.
You know, we'd have done our own thing, and that was it. And everything revolved around the assembly halls, you know, where we worked now. You know, that was it. We stopped within an hour or so. A lot of small areas would be affected straight away. In other words, they'd be laid off. And perhaps the fine lines and them sort of things, they would follow within days. But I can't really remember. It must have been a very gradual thing. Probably when we started to realise that we weren't getting paid for meetings in the end, where we'd been paid in the past.
Who was that new area manager then? Maybe it was around him.
Well, yeah, it was around him, but that's Lambert. Lambert is...
No, I
didn't think. No, well, he's quite an animal. Except he's an honest animal, you know, and he made his intentions known sort of within 12 months of him coming into our shop. He made his intentions known what he intended to do. He'd come from the TR7 plant at Liverpool Spee, and that had closed down. That had been involved in many disputes.
Yes.
And no doubt, from managers down throughout Spee, they were used to disputes, etc. And he no doubt was one of the few to survive that closure. When it closed, they transferred him down. At the cost of the company, and why? Because there was a job of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, or them days, which is the Edwards days, that was the time for that sort of person to be there. You know, who couldn't necessarily justify what he was doing, but would just simply say, it's going to be done, and what are you going to do about it? And of course, the cracks or the chinks was always already showing on the people who worked on the shop floor, and the weaknesses was already starting. Once Edward started to win some of his fights, they felt themselves getting weaker, and of course everybody went along with the waves.
Mm.
And Edward's got a very blue murder, and of course that reflected throughout all the other plants as well. You know,
was it also because Mesha Day worked there?
No, I don't think I don't think that would have created any problems to us, with the company. I don't think so.
Mm. And what about this discipline procedure? So, because that started then as well.
I'm trying to think what procedure there was before that. The procedure virtually was they'll do whatever, and if we challenge them, then they'll pull back. There was no recognised procedure, and I presume that the disciplinary procedure that we've got now, it's a policy, it was never agreed.
No.
Although we was all made aware of it, so say the senior stewards were made aware,
yeah,
this is what we've got to do, you know.
Hmm.
And some of that, I believe, is down to the various industrial laws whereby you've got to have a procedure, because
yes.
you can't
yes.
just sack somebody for one thing, you know, unless it's serious, you know. So I believe that the company had to introduce one anyway.
Hmm.
And of course, we don't like going along with the company and saying, yes, there's got to be a procedure to discipline our people. So it was a policy that was never signed, so it was never an agreement. And,
you know, that caused
people problems, because they then started saying, well, what's the union done about it? You know, and although we might say to them, well, you are the union, but what are you doing about it? You know, various things. But by and large, I find nothing wrong with it. You know, as long as it's used in the right way, you don't have to discipline somebody on every occasion. But now they seem to have gone over the top. A lot of things are just black and white. If you've done a wrong, it's wrong. No matter what reasons you might have, it's still a wrong. And if we let you off, then somebody else will be looking to see us. Somebody would be looking to us and saying, look, they're weak. They're showing weakness, because no doubt they were very strong, and still are, the company. The manager's still strong. Not those people, but with the backing they've got, they are strong. And they're able to get away with a lot. And we don't think they're flexible enough, although I certainly recognise that sort of years ago, they was too flexible. You know, I was aware of militants or leftists, if you like, who
yes.
cost me money and other people other money. And
yes,
of course,
yeah.
when the rises stopped getting so great, because people weren't prepared to go into dispute for them, because that's the only way you get money, you don't get money by asking, standard living started to drop, and people then started to realise that they can't afford to go out, and they can't be led by these people who keep telling them to go out, because it's the only way you'll get peace.
Yes.
And no doubt there were extremists at Solihull, and now there's not so many.
But wasn't that always more on the car side than on the Land Rover?
Well,
side?
Yeah, on the cars it was a lot, but like I say, extremists.
Yeah.
There's no doubt ultra extreme, perhaps on the SD1 on the cars.
Yes.
In the Land Rover it wasn't so bad.
No.
But I mean, anybody who tried to lead you for any punitive reason, I'd call them an extremist to a degree. Yeah. They're not. They're not representing their members at all.
No.
You know, although quite often the shop stewards will have the foresight, and perhaps the members don't always see that. You know, we do have to leave, and we know at the same time we can't always get them to go with us, and we have to accept that. And those who don't, a drop dead long time ago. You can't leave or dictate.
No. But there was that, I mean, was the Land Rover often sort of led by car people or not? Or was it really separate? I mean, if you look at...
Well, we were separate. Yeah, we were separate. And then, but of course, when the cars, when the, not certainly SD1, because there were... there were some extremists down there. Of course, when we say extremists, they were good talkers.
Yeah.
At shop steward's meetings.
Yes.
And there was always a lot of truth in what they were saying. And quite often, the Land Rover stewards would go along with it. Because you couldn't... they was almost... professional orators, you know, they could really talk, and people couldn't compete. In other words, they could get up, I could get up and say, try and contradict something, and I'd be argued into the ground. And so quite often people would just watch and just go along with it. So to a degree we were led a lot by the cars for a period of time, because there weren't too many people on Land Rover with too many ideas, progressive or regressive.
Yes, yes. But there was also, I mean, I don't know, you know, to what extent you were aware of that, but I think that the conditions on cars seem to have been quite a lot worse than on Land Rover. Or would you disagree with that? I mean,
what do you mean conditions? You mean industrial relations?
I also thought things like cycle times and working conditions. I mean, not so much the environment, but and the management was, I think... But again, maybe I'm exaggerating. I think life was worse, and they had the night shift, of course.
Yeah.
Which you never had.
Yeah, that probably doesn't help. I don't think people really like nights anyway. And
no.
No doubt that could that would show in their attitudes at various times on various issues. But I believe they also had a manager from. Speak as well, Liverpool, he came down. And I'm not sure what the cycle times are like. I know certainly the environment was better than the Land Rover environment.
New factories and so on. Yeah,
more
space.
I can't think too much on... I wouldn't say it was that much different, although I can understand why their attitude might be different. You know, I wouldn't like to work nights. And I know that after a while, nights and days... that would come up in my personality some way or other. I would show that. So perhaps they did have I think we were more easy going on Land Rover.
I think for one reason that people stayed together more on Land Rover. Like, although there was turnover, it wasn't to the same extent.
No, it wasn't. It was minimal. Yeah, it was minimal. Whether they worked any other day now, I don't know. Perhaps that was, contributed to the turnover logo, I don't know. But it may well be because, you know, this business about family, you know, although people weren't literally all the families, you know.
No.
It was more family-ish, I suppose, and going somewhere alien, you know. And that's what it was at the time. Once the cars used to be in the next building, sort of next to the fire line at one time, the old Rover cars were built there. So we're still in the same vicinity, but once the cars moved down there, a lot of people like to alienate themselves and by saying, that's them, leave them to it, we're separate. And that was a division at one time that took a bit of bridging. And then, but of course, then once they started having all the problems that they did have, then people were obviously then looking to divide again.
What did people want jobs on cars?
No, not many wanted jobs on cars.
And the other way around, did people start to... I mean, before they closed down the SD1, did they...
Yeah, did people want to come back up? A lot of people said they didn't want to, but when they did actually close a place, in the end, there was quite a few volunteers in the end who did want to. Although there was a time when there was financial pressure put on them, as much as some people would have to go. They didn't want to be in a position to pay redundancy when there was a job... you know, half a mile up the road, on Land Rover. But there was a few who wanted to come up. But by and large, I believe the majority down there, they had their fill as well. And that would no doubt take up your point about the industrial relations they got and the problems they had with the managers.
Mm.
I never had to work under it down there, but I mean, there was shops who were just so stronger than me down there. and that was always involved in a lot of problems, and lost many battles. And that, like I said, that I recognised the fact that they were better, but still lost.
Yeah.
So no doubt there were stronger managers in that area, and perhaps we're experiencing that now.
And by the mid-70s, the rates were the same, weren't they? Or they were always more or less the same, like, sort of average earnings in cars and ventures?
Yeah, that's right. It was in the mid-70s. It was still sort of pretty even. Although, sort of the late 70s was the introduction of the... that was 81, the introduction of the present grades that we've got now.
Yeah.
The five grades, from, I suppose, was it 7, 8, and 9 or something like that?
Yes.
So, of course, that caused a lot of problems as well. You know, people... One day I was working with somebody who was on the same rate as me, and the next day he was on a different rate, a higher rate. And that caused divisions. But all them sort of discussions were taken at a higher level. And people started, I believe, on the shop floor, started ailing at themselves again from the trade union. They felt that there was the input that they was having, you know, wasn't meaning anything. And
a lot of people didn't like
centralised bargaining. I don't know what they like that idea, because ideally, yeah, but they've got to be on it full time. You know, if you've got problems, but of course you get people speaking. You know, it's crazy situations you get. You know, where you've got sort of language might be assisting in making a decision that would impose something on the people at Soul Hill.
Yeah,
the other way around. You know, we would assist in something being imposed on Longbridge or County or whatever. It was always hard for the person who was suffering to say, you know, why should that committee there from all our little plants tell us what we've got to do here? You know, whatever that might have been. But I think people prefer it as it is now at Sorrel. Although they don't, although we thought that once we became on our own, which we virtually are now, I know we...
Yes.
We do negotiate, what, this year, last year, for the first time. We weren't offered really any more. No, there was never no intention to give us any more either. If there was a complete break, whether we would or not, I don't know. But everybody thought we'd do much better than what we have done. But of course, while we're still part of Ireland, they can't readily offer much more.
No. When you first became a steward, that was around the time of the collective agreement, wasn't it?
Yeah, the collective agreement was going on in them days. But
that was taken on by more senior stewards,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was,
people weren't really involved.
Yeah, well, that was like the Rover collective agreement, and that was when that was all the Rover plants, and there was probably about 7 of them scattered around the country. Although the majority are in the Solal area, you know, little factory and factory there.
Yeah.
See, there's one just over the back here, Tyslam. That's only a mile away. And there's another factory a mile away from that, Acock Spring. And that was negotiated really by senior stewards at Solal.
What if that filtered down onto the shop floor? Did anything come down?
Well, it should have done. But, I mean, of course, I know that quite often it didn't.
Mm.
Because we've got the same problems we had then, but we've got now, and they used to say people elected, and they do it for reasons other than, you know, for the benefit of the people that they represent. And people would attend, can quite easily attend meetings, and they have no clue what's being said.
No.
And to just sit there, you know, like a lot of people do, overwhelming majority of them just sit there and listen to what's going on. Unless they're actually involved in debate themselves, you know, I should imagine it's got to be difficult for them to put something over to their members. If all they're going to do is listen in a meeting, if they hold a meeting of their group, and when their group start firing questions at them, they're not going to be able to sort of answer too well, because they're not used to answering or arguing or debating.
No.
And there's still only, just like it was then, just as it is now, there's still only a few people who attend meetings who make a contribution. And that's why quite often the membership is kept in the dark, although it's there, although there is a way that they can be told. You know, and the senior stewards and the conveners can turn around and say, look, we've told you stewards, what more can we do than come down and tell you? How do we know what your members want? You never come and tell us. You know, we've still got that, as we did then. So, you're like, yeah, people weren't too sure what the rather collective agreement meant, the same as people aren't sure now what's going on.
No.
Even more so now, because there's even fewer stewards now, and there's quite a few areas of people who aren't represented at all. You know, no immediate representation by shop steward for various reasons. The works won't elect one. So how can they have an input with anything? How can they receive their information? The senior steward hasn't got the facility to go around and keep them ginned up. You know, he's actively involved in other things during the day. So those groups will always be in the dark.
So in that sense, has the Edwards approach over the head of the unions, sort of by direct ballots with the workforce, been successful? People believe now that...
I think some people are prepared to wait until every November, or as it is now, January, to get all the information they want on wages conditions. Mm-hmm. And then I think some areas of people are prepared to do that. All the other things, all the, if you like, the nitpicking, the small issues, they're prepared to carry them on the back and forget it. Mm. Until they're involved in something themselves, then they're squealing. And they don't know who to squeal to. Then they get on the phone and call the senior steward up, and he's going to try and sort someone out for them.
Yes.
And during the course of time, he gets up there and he'll find there's a dozen things wrong.
Yes.
But they forgot the 11. The one time, the 12th thing was too much for them. And it's only then. And then, forced about to claw back all those things, or for the senior steward to claw back all those things, it's almost an impossible task. People have got to have a shop steward.
When did you become a deputy senior steward?
Only about 3 months, two months or 3 months. Probably 3 months or more. No, probably about 8-9 weeks, I should say. And the previous deputy, because he's got two, he left, and he'd been a shop steward since I'd been there. He left and he's gone on the dole. Yeah, very disillusioned. And
did he get voluntary
resignation?
Yeah. Oh, he was offered.
He was offered no more than anybody else. Yeah, redundancies were going around. He submitted his name, and the company jumped at the opportunity. Yeah, we'll take this one, because he was one of those people who was prepared to stand up and against the company, and not always with the soldiers, if you like, behind him. He knew what was right and what was wrong. That was Terry Atkinson. And in actual fact, he was on that original committee as well. And
it's amazing, isn't it? No job.
He was completely disillusioned, without a doubt. Huh. It seemed to be, all of a sudden, a lot of people are fed up, but something must have just cracked in him the one day. And it's only happened this last 3 months. All of a sudden, he might have been more virtually like that. He just had his fill. But and then there was an election, and I just got in on the phone.
And are you likely to go on courses now in the future?
No, not any more courses than would have been open to me now. There's no courses. The only sort of course I wanted to go on was the time study.
Yes.
But that was the course that senior student actually went on. He went on with other people, but it's not a course specifically for any sort of senior student in any way. Any lay steward, if I can call that,
yes,
can go on that sort of course. That's the only sort of courses that are available now. There's only sort of they do these silly shop steward courses for one day at work, you know, and they'll throw a lunch in as well. But there's nothing to be learnt there, because there's nothing everything you can learn there you should already know.
Yes.
You know, I know the policy and I know the agreements we've got. I'm not going to learn any more in that day than I will anywhere else. After being a shop steward 8 years, I know it.
Yes.
What they can show me in a day. Now, of course, outside of that, there are these 10 or 11 week courses that TUC hold at Sol Hill. Now, no doubt there are things there that would be worthwhile picking up. But there's certain, sort of a few years ago I'd thought about it, but I never liked the idea of being away from work. And that wasn't because I like work, it's because there was a need for me, I thought. You know, to be actively involved is something that you can be trying to sort out every day, you know, and of course when we had that committee, I can go back to that. That gave me an interest outside of my own group. In other words, if I had no problem, somebody always had a problem that I could help them. So I was a bit reluctant to go on these 10-week courses, you know, one day a week. And
Solihull
College. Yeah. No, the other deputy, Eddie, he's been on the 10-week course, or the one-day course for 10 weeks. He's, I think he's been on them both now. Apparently, I think there's a part one and a part two. And no doubt, I would, without even knowing what they're about, what it comes down to me is this. Although I know that I could learn a lot, I don't think it would be of any practical use where I were. Because no matter what we say, whether we've got right on our side, if they say something contrary to the company, then it stands. They will get away with it, because we are not powerful like we used to be. You know, so the additional knowledge wouldn't... It would benefit me as a person, but it wouldn't allow me to do anything more at work, I'm sure it wouldn't. Although, I've seriously thought about going on one. You know, now, because all of a sudden now, you're like, there's not much going on at work.
No.
If you work on the track, you're bored. Once you become a shop steward and you've been actively involved, you've had an interest. Now that interest is waning because there's nothing going on. Nobody seems to have the problems they used to have. Then I'm looking elsewhere. And if I go, it would probably be for myself. And perhaps one day, if the big world turns, I might be able to use that knowledge.
Yes.
But it's not a must at the moment.
No.
You know, years ago it would have been a great benefit, you know, to... But now we can't... like I say, we can have rights on our side, and it doesn't mean a thing. The members aren't with us like they used to be.
Hmm. Yes, and you probably learned a lot because of that section you were in was fairly strongly organised, so
yeah.
You picked it up there from seniors, other stewards. Did you say you were quite active in sort of sports activities at all?
No, but I do play cricket, and I play tennis.